Welcome to Let's Talk, brought to you live by the National Indigenous Radio Service, the only opportunity offered to the broader community to be informed on the issues and current affairs from a First Nations perspective. This is Amy McQuire with Let's Talk.
Welcome to Let's Talk. First of all, I'd like to acknowledge the continuing sovereignty of all First Nations people all across the country. I'd like to acknowledge my elders past and present and the elders of more recent arrivals. Welcome to our listeners if you tuned in across the nation via the National Indigenous Radio Service. And if you're listening on the web, 989fm.com.au or on the podcast a little bit later, welcome to you as well. It's great to have your company. And today marks the second anniversary of the tragic death in custody of a 22-year-old Yemiji woman, Ms. Ju, in a South Hedland watch house. On August 4th, 2014. Since that time, there's been protests all across the country in support of the family. There's been a promise pulled out of the WA Premier Colin Barnett that there'd be action on the death in custody of Ms. Ju. The family have compelled Barnett up to South Hedland. They've constantly kept the pressure on, and the result has been the sped-up coronial inquest in Western Australia. They have a real problem with coronial inquests being delayed continually. So even though it happened about a year and a bit after Ms. Ju's death, the coronial inquest began last year and continued over this year, and now the family are waiting for those findings. They also want the CCTV footage showing Ms. Ju in the South Hedland Watch House and being transported to the health campus released to the public. They watched it during the coronial inquiry, and it was subsequently suppressed by the coroner. She claims that it was to prevent re-traumatising the family, but the family want it released, particularly in the wake of the recent shocking footage at Dondale Youth Detention Centre showing the torture of Aboriginal kids on CCTV footage. The family now feel that in order to get Australia to wake up and listen to what's happening and what happened to their niece and to ensure that it never happens again and there's some sort of accountability, they need that CCTV footage released. So today, to mark her anniversary of her death, is her uncle, Sean Harris, and he joined me on the phone last week. Start by asking you your mob and your country.
Yeah, I'm a Nunda and Wadjeri tribe member from up in the Midwest, Western Australia, Yemiji mob.
And you grew up around your traditional country, didn't you?
Yeah, we spent a little bit of travelling, but the great majority of time has been back up home here, yeah, in the Midwest area.
It's interesting though, because for the past 2 years you've been travelling all over the country, haven't you? I mean, had you travelled a lot before then? You'd mostly just stayed around your own mob at the time?
Well, yeah, that's pretty much the gist of it. Mainly just in WA. I've been my first actual plane flight. I had to leave Perth to go to Brisbane for the G20 gatherings back in 2014, which was not quite a month after my niece's first National Day of Action for her death in custody back in 2014.
That's 2014, so 2 years later. It feels like, has it felt like the time has flown by, or has it crept by, do you think, in your, as you
it feels like about 22 years, actually. It's been a long, long road. The road being mainly uphill still to this point. There's still a few more rises in that hill to get to the top, especially in regards to the releasing of the footage for my niece's last 2 or 3 days or so in custody.
Because, I mean, we're talking it, today's the 4th of August. It's a very significant day, I guess, for you, because this is the day that your niece, Ms. Ju, passed away. Do you remember much from that time or what you were doing on that day?
Yeah, well, I was actually on my way back from Perth on my back home to Geraldton for my son's 10th anniversary. I was actually at Graveside visiting my son, and which is when we sort of got wind and received the news of my niece's death in custody. So it's been a pretty hard anniversary for the last 2 years, let alone the many years to come.
Yeah, so
it's
you'd
not going to
been,
be very well.
You'd marked that day a significant day for your own son, I guess, for the past 10 years at that point. So it must have been quite hard to hear about something like that happening on his anniversary.
On my son's 10th anniversary, so this year will be my niece's second plus my son's 12th anniversary. It's just a hard time for all of our families. As it is, though, with my niece's issues, it's just amplified a lot of, depression and other various emotions, not just for myself, but personally for other people, close family and extended as well, and friends.
Oh, definitely. Can I ask you a bit about how your niece was? What sort of girl was she like? Do you like to remember her as?
Yeah, she was always a bubbly person, you know. She's just one of those people, always happy and smiling, and she was just a caring person. Everyone cared about her as well and loved her. Her smile, she's sort of one of those people who had an infectious smile, you know, and when she was around, it was just a general atmosphere, you know, everyone was happy and things like that. Just a family person, even though she got deprived of being able to start her own family, you know, which is sad in itself, being such a young girl who has been deprived of the rest of her life through the severe deprivation of liberty that's been inflicted through the system.
She was young, wasn't she? She was only 22 at the time.
Yeah, so she was only just 4 months odd shy of her 23rd birthday. So this year she will actually be 25 in December. It's just that the way that things have happened and the circumstances surrounding her death is just a severe injustice that needs to be dealt with and addressed in a proper way, and not just tokenistic manners or actions from the government's part. We need real truth and real accountability, and that's the only way that real justice will be at least delivered to some extent for my poor niece, so that she can rest in peace to some degree.
You know, now information started coming out around the coronial inquest about your niece, but at the time you're telling me your niece's grandmother and your auntie, Aunty Carol Rowe, actually had tried to get information out at the time, hadn't she, while your niece was incarcerated. What was the response at that point? There was sort of an information blackout while your niece was in custody, wasn't there?
Yeah, well, Aunty Carol tried, I think, a number of times, more than once, I'm pretty sure, to get in contact with... Oh, she did get in contact with the police in the South Headland Station, and they denied her the chance to speak to my niece, which they continually said that she was perfectly all right and there was nothing wrong with her as well. She had a good sleep and, you know, all these constant lies and gibberish. And, apparently it wasn't protocol, approved protocol, et cetera, for them to put Auntie Carol on the phone to my niece when my auntie would have realised and known straight away that she was in pain and, you know, all them other sort of things. But one of the responses to that sort of that thing from my auntie was that we never gave the police or government protocol, et cetera, to do what they did for Miss G, to Miss G. She's not here anymore because of their needless senseless deprivation of liberty, which is so deeply ingrained, the institutional systemic racism. How many other people out there that have died and have been grossly treated, mistreated in the judicial system, be it the juvenile or adult prisons, be it male or female, be it black or white or pink or purple for that matter. The whole system needs to be overhauled and addressed, and changes need to be made to stop things like this from happening. My niece, all she needed was antibiotics, and she'd still be here.
Mm.
So it's an apparent world-class health system, and yet it's not if you're a black person in Australia, because the systemic racism ensures that you won't get examined properly,
yeah,
and you'll just get more sick.
What had actually happened? You know, your auntie was ringing. What was happening to your niece at the time that you've now found out?
She was begging in pain, begging for help. She was crying in agony. She was pleading for her life, and all these things and all her cries for help and her pleading were ignored due to systemic racism and the prehistoric mentalities of the police and the health system in Western Australia.
Because what were they saying to her at the time? She'd complained that she was in pain, hadn't they?
Yeah, that was pretty much calling her a junkie, and that she was faking it and standing over her, trying to give her medical advice, whilst at the same time denying her the basic human right to seek medical treatment. Although that being said, when they actually did muster up the courage, I guess you could say, to take my niece to hospital, the systemic racism in Western Australia still ensured that she never got examined properly.
Yeah.
And hence the health system is just as accountable as the police and the ex-partner as well. There's all these parties that are directly accountable. The CCTV footage proves and directly incriminates and proves these people and their lies. They don't remember and can't remember that they testified to in the coronial inquest, because they knew that they could lie in an inquest and not be held accountable, because the inquest is only a hearing, it's not a trial.
Before we get to that, the issues around the CCTV footage, I just wanted to ask you about, just for our listeners' perspective, why was your niece in custody in the first place? What had led up to the police taking her into custody? Should she have been there in the first place?
Yeah, well, this has caused a big uproar as well. It's, the reason that my niece was originally taken into custody was from a petty amount of $1,000 worth of unpaid fines. That's an amount that the system apparently threw around and gave us and gave release to the public.
Mm.
And yet, once the inquest had started back in last November, all of a sudden the figure's $3,500, $3,600. Now, why the $2,000, $2,500 jump for a starters? And, well, there's just so many questions that are still unanswered.
Mm.
And the coronial inquest, inquests are supposed to happen to bring out truth. But the West Australian coroner had the power and has the power to make people remember, although that seemed to also be, them powers were not enforced to the full extent that should have been.
The very interesting thing, I think, is that still people nationwide don't know about your niece, which I find amazing, but at the time, it could have easily just been ignored, couldn't have, unless for the advocacy of your family. When did you start to realise, like shortly after your niece's death, that you had to start speaking out, otherwise there was potential that this, you know, could drag on for even longer than it actually has now?
Yeah, well, pretty much straight after my niece's passing, we started getting info coming in from here and there, and a lot of it we put together. And, well, just from the start, we knew that there was foul play, and that the loss and shock of losing this beautiful young lady, she needed she needs justice.
Mm.
She needs the truth to be told. She needs her voice to be put out there. And sadly, what we've had to do and how far we've come is from us manipulating, so to speak, and making use of the today's technology, which our elders and our past activists, I guess you could say, have not had this technology to be able to get our voices out to the rest of the world, let alone out of our individual states, mm-hmm. was hard enough. So we've had to manipulate the technology and social media for us, plus other media, manipulate some. It's not quite the right word, but we've had to do that to get my niece's voice out there to the world, and we've done that to the best
that you can.
Whilst fighting to keep our anger and our frustrations aside, which is that's starting to be emphasised more and more, the anger and frustration now with the continual suppression and the blatant suppression of the CCTV.
Yeah,
when they're using the family and every black fella in Australia as an excuse for being re-traumatised, seeing the footage. How many times, how many more deaths in custody? Is that not really traumatising the family?
Mm.
Or will not releasing the footage, will releasing the footage not help to stop deaths in custody? Hence, no more inquests into deaths in custody? Et cetera, et cetera. The list has the reasons.
I was just going to say, can you tell our listeners a bit about what the CCTV, because all the people who attended the inquest, it was played at the coronial inquest, this CCTV footage, but the coroner suppressed it. What does it actually show and why do you want it released, do you think?
It shows from the very start that my niece is limping. She cannot walk properly. She's begging and she's moaning in pain.
Mm.
She's in the charge room for what seems almost an hour or so, being processed for an hour, and there's a female police officer standing in front of her, standing over her, talking, you should do this and you should do this and that, you know, sort of thing, trying to diagnose her medical condition. Yet at the same time, they're refuting and saying that she's faking it. Then there's a lot of, it's not just one or two pieces of CCTV. There are a fair few snippets, I guess you could say, from a fair few different angles, from a fair few different cameras. And that's including, that's not just from the police, the watch house. This includes footage from the actual hospital and emergency department as well. So this directly proves, conflicts stories that have been told on stand from the nurse and nursing staff and the police who, as I mentioned before, have lied on stand because they know they can because it's only hearing and they can't get legally punished for lying on stand.
It also shows...
For example, we heard a nurse on stand say that she did not see Jalika until a certain time after in a certain cubicle, yet straight after that we went outside and seen footage, private screening of separate footage that they would not show in the gallery and refused to show in the gallery. That proved that that nurse was lying, that she had seen Jalika 5 minutes before she testified, you know, things like that. They dragged her out of the cell by her arms or on the ground, like a dead carcass, as we've been saying, has been stated.
They
chucked her out of the... Yes. And then they proceeded to place her in the back of a paddy wagon while she was handcuffed, when she was dead or, if not, very close to. And when they got to the health campus, they pulled her out of the back of the four-wheel drive and just pretty much just flung her, tossed her in to a wheelchair where her head just rolled back and they didn't bother to put her in the wheelchair with any dignity when it should have been an ambulance in the first place. So it's even not just... after her life in death, they're still inflicting deprivation of liberty on this poor girl by not releasing the footage.
Yeah. What is it? It really shows exactly what you were saying. It's not just the whole idea of imprisoning an innocent girl like your niece, who's only up for parking for fines. We don't even know what sort of fines they were, but it was for only up for that. But even not even giving her the dignity of first providing her health care, which is the right of any other Australian, particularly a family violence victim, but just even not helping her. These are her last hours. Even the way they treated her as she was dying, a 22-year-old girl, an innocent girl. I mean, that says it all about where we are as a country, really, those images, don't they? And that may be why the coroner doesn't want Australia to see them.
Yeah, well, it's not just the national backlash. It would be the international backlash and the public outcry, just as with the Four Corners, with the Donbau detention, juvenile detention centre. That is very strong and powerful footage, as we all know. But when the world will see through their own eyes footage of... West Australian police and Australian police dragging a dying slash dead young Aboriginal female out of her cell on the ground and handcuffing a body, plus throwing her into a wheelchair and wheeling her into an emergency department as if she was just asleep. That's deserved public outcry and backlash, which Australia needs the attention and... They need that attention to help stop the injustices to all people, not just black people. Mm. The fact that black people we are the most highly incarcerated people of pretty much all over the world, yeah. Especially for, in Western Australia, we're one of the richest states in the world, and yet we're one of the most oppressed peoples in the world. And the system are still doing these things to our people and getting away with it. And refusing to release footage to show the world what the real truth and what happened is just blatant and so typical of the West Australian and the Australian government system, including the judicial and mail systems. History shows that there are so many deaths in custody due to health.
Yeah.
They've been denied access to being... examined properly. They've been denied access to their medications while they've been in the lockup. These are deliberate actions where death in custody eventuate, but just because they're not directly at the hands, so to speak, of the judicial officers, it does not mean that they still don't have bloodstained hands.
Mm. You're listening to Let's Talk, where my guest today is Sean Harris, the uncle of Ms. Dew, 22-year-old Yamaji woman who died in custody 2 years ago in South Hedland. We're marking the second anniversary of her death today as we await the coronial inquest findings and push for the CCTV footage showing how she died to be released to the public. And that's what the family wants in order to get Australia to wake up. We'll go to a song right now and we'll be back shortly.
Rite of life, the pious said, forget the past, the past is dead. But all I see in front of me is a concrete floor, a cell door, and John Pat.
I tear at the page, forget his age. Hence called a cry, that's why he died. But I can't forget a silhouette of a concrete floor, a cell door, and John Pat.
The end product of Gattaya Law is a viaduct for fang and claw, and a place to dwell like Roman's hell, of a concrete floor, a cell door, and John Pat.
He's there, way are there in their minds now, deep within that apprehends a sidelong glance, a silly grin to remind them all of a Gattaya wall, a concrete floor, a cell door, and John Pat.
You're listening to Let's Talk with Amy McQuire on 98.9 FM.
Back to Let's Talk, where my guest today is Sean Harris, the uncle of Ms. Dew, and we're talking about his niece's death in custody on the second anniversary of her death. We'll pick back up. Here's the chat with Sean Harris. It's a form of violence, I think, to deprive particularly an innocent, a really vulnerable woman like your niece, the healthcare she really needs. That's a form of violence in itself. But I was just going to say that when you look at the Royal Commission into Aboriginal Deaths in Custody, like, there are so many cases, particularly women, who are similar to your nieces, particularly one, Nita Blanket, who was older but chronic asthmatic, was refused proper health care and died in the ambulance on the way to the hospital. So this was 20, 30 years ago, and the consequence of Australia's apathy has been that women like your niece continue to die. Like, do you think any more inquiries, I mean, how you want justice for your niece, but the weight of all of history, Australia's history, is really against that. Do you think showing CCTV, because there's been that Royal Commission, showing that CCTV is really going to enforce why this is an urgent issue, I guess? Do you think Australians will wake up in the way that they did for Don Dale?
Yeah, well, the footage, especially in this day and age, is vital evidence. Why do the police have CCTV cameras here and there? Why do they have chest cams? There's vital evidence to get the truth out there and to for justice. You know, it's just unbelievable and shocking. It's just pathetic how afraid Australia is to get the real truth out there, and how much in denial that they are, and how much lies they feed to the rest of the world. Because they're that used to it, and they're that used to getting away with it. Well, yeah. They thought they got away with my niece, and they thought they swept her under the carpet. But the thing was that they messed with the wrong family yet again, and we haven't stopped. We've had that support, and the whole world and the people who have helped and supported us all the way, that includes the people who are jumping on board, so to speak, recently, and, you know, not since the start. We all know and how unjust, and we all know the severe deprivation of liberty that was inflicted on her, the willful severe deprivation of liberty, needless and senseless death in custody. The fact that we have such a strong support group, I guess you could say, gives us extra strength to fight not just for my niece, Miss G, but for all deaths in custody, as we always have been from the start. We have advocated for change, so this can't happen again. Yet that being said, there have been a number of deaths in custody since my niece's passing in the last 2 years.
Yeah, which is really
so,
sad. When you talk
the police
about...
are keeping tight-lipped on that as well. There's one in Canberra, there's NT, there's been a couple here in WA, there's been some over, you know, in Long Bay, for example. All these things, and the inquests need to be swift and independent. We have the coroner, Fogliani, for my niece's inquest, served 18 years in the Department of Prosecutions. And now she's a coroner refusing to release the CCTV.
Yeah, right.
That's just dropping in the ocean compared to the fight that we have had to fight and the fight that we still have to fight here in WA. But like I stated, we are not just fighting for here in WA and for my nieces, for custodial reforms and systemic changes for all of us peoples.
When you talk about the fight, I think a lot of our listeners wouldn't have realised the lengths you've had to go through just to get a coronial inquest sped up. Can you explain to our listeners what you've actually had to do over the past 2 years and what your family has had to do, even just to get, you know, this should be a case that's automatically on the front page of newspapers. It should be a case that automatically, you know, warrants investigation straight away, like a sped up investigation. But what have you actually had to do to ensure that that happens? You've had to go above and beyond, haven't you?
We sure have. We've literally had to travel. I myself have travelled over 40,000 k's, which is equivalent to once around the world. All over Australia, I've travelled just for. To help spread the word and to try and get help and support and to let people know of what's happening still. It's not in Western Australia, it's still way out west over here. And the mentalities of the government and the judicial systems and the health system reflects. We have had to do countless rallies, countless radio interviews, website articles, countless statements. We've worked heavily with social justice organisations like Sydney and Melbourne, Indigenous Social Justice Association, the Perth Death in Custody Watch Committee. We've worked with the Maritime Union. We've worked with so many different groups and organisations, including Socialist Alliance, Green Left Weekly, Greens members of the Parliament. We've got so much help and support and the time is yesterday for this CCTV to be released. That is a major and vital component of my niece, justice for my niece and the fight for justice. And to keep holding that back is just blatant. They're just blatantly afraid of public backlash.
So they can use
all the excuses that they want. And quite frankly, to use the family and the broad Aboriginal community as an excuse is pathetic, if you ask me.
It's actually quite offensive, isn't it, to claim, because this is what the coroner has claimed, is that she's worried it's going to re-traumatise your family and Aboriginal families in the future. I mean, for a white woman in a completely different position to assume to know what's going to traumatise you, I mean, it's really another form of racism, isn't it, to even assume to know that, do you think?
Yeah, well, that's right. There's even one comment on social media at one stage about the coroner's refusal to release the footage, which went something along the lines of white people making decisions about what's best for the black people yet again. You know, that speaks volumes. And the fact that the coroner has been working 18 years or so in the Department of Public Prosecutions, and her boss is the Attorney General, the same Attorney General who came out and made public statements when my niece's body was still warm, you might as well say.
What did they make the public statements?
Came out and made public statements defending locking people up for unpaid fines. So this is the same person who is the boss of the coroner who is refusing to release the CCTV.
Yeah, so you...
That's just an example, a small drop in the ocean of the powers to be, so to speak, that we have to deal with and fight.
It's
needlessly.
It's really sad that you have to make those images public in the first place, because Australia just doesn't seem to care. I mean, you've told us constantly about what's actually in those images. Just the fact that a young girl like your niece could die in custody in the first place is just, you know, should be rallying all over the country. But the fact that Australia needs to see those images to believe it, to believe your family, to be outraged, to push for change, that in itself says something about the real racism and why we've had almost 400 deaths in custody, doesn't it? The fact that Australia needs that, needs to see the trauma of your niece in real terms.
Yeah, well, we've been targeted by racist Australia since my niece's body was still warm, so to speak. Myself personally, plus my deceased niece, plus the family. Once the inquest started, the truth was coming out, and yet we were and still are being referred to and looked at as troublemakers and liars. You know, we need that footage released to prove to the world and finally once and for all shut the people up there, the naysayers and the people who are still living in denial and in their safety bubbles, that this is what happens. It is wrong. It should never happen. It should never happen again, and these people need to be held accountable. Just because it happens to black people, the majority of the times, it doesn't mean it doesn't happen to everyone. As I've stated so many times before, it's pink, purple, blue, white, brown, or black. Police brutality happens to all of us. The fact that we're the highest incarcerated in Australia, peoples, is the reason that there are more black deaths in custody and nobody cares. Mm-hmm. That is why they keep happening. There's no accountability, and all parties involved with bloodstained hands are still freely operating and get freely promoted as rewards for black murders in custody. Because we've got to be real, they're not deaths in custody. A lot of them are murders in custody, unaccounted murders.
People are quite shocked by that, aren't they? I think there's a habit that white people don't want to, and maybe unconsciously they hold that view. They don't want to believe that Aboriginal people are telling the truth about this brutalisation. And I think that's why Don Dale was so shocking to so many white people, because they sort of saw that, you know, blackfellas were telling the truth. Blackfellas aren't lying about police brutality.
Yeah, well, that's right. That footage was just totally shocking. And it's sad to say it's not so unbelievable, because we know, we as in the educated people, are the ones who aren't in denial about what's going on in today's real world against all people. The people like us who look at other people as another person and not by their skin colour.
It's really hard. I mean, a lot of white Australians, I guess the reason they can't believe it too is they have very minimal contact with the justice system the way that we do as Aboriginal people. But I guess the fact that this is one death in custody, this is one horrendous thing that's happened to your family, but it's another sort of really horrible thing that has happened in the cycle of griefs in our community, hasn't it? Does it ever end? I think white people don't understand just how big the grief is of all these deaths of... early deaths of our young people, particularly our women, our men. They don't understand that this is one death among many. You know what I mean? How do we deal with that grief or get people to understand what it's actually like to be black in Australia today when you're dealing with this really horrendous brutality within the justice system?
Yeah, so, that's a hard one. I think there's a... We really need the people out there to stop thinking that they know everything about us and stop and open the ears just a bit more and read up a bit more instead of listening to the general public consensus and opinions about the history of our peoples, the present and the future of our peoples, because if the people keep living in denial, then their safety bubbles, as I was saying before, the world will only get worse, and we need people to stand up as one in a united stance, as a united voice, to force these this sick government to stop preaching human rights. It's blatantly preaching human rights, and yet the whole world's blatantly sitting by and turning the blatant blind eye. The time has come that we need help, and not just help by clicking like or share or commenting on a page. We need to step up to the plate and walk the walk and not actually talk the talk, because that's the only way that the governments, be it in Australia or globally, will enforce change. If we enforce change as a group, a one-method group in the flesh, not a cyber group.
That being said,
we do need all the help we can get, but we still need more people actually on the ground in the flesh at rallies. And when you get half, only a couple of hundred people show interest in a Black Death in Custody event on Facebook, and yet you get thousands for shark culls or et cetera, you know, the likes.
More people there worried about animals typical, than Aboriginal people.
Well, yeah, that's right. Even at the Dondale, you know, in Perth here, there was not very many at all. People that turned up, sadly, where's the outcry? Australia is too laid back, because Australians, too many are in their laid back safety bubble and they don't care. The NIMBYs, not in my backyard, who only get off their backsides and help do something when it concerns the money in their pockets, so to speak.
Oh, and that's the problem, that incarceration is very big business at the same time, which I think is the other problem. And I think you raised something really important about the number of people going to rallies. When you consider that, you know, Australia, leading news bulletins around Australia were the Black Lives Matter rallies, and also what's happening to African-American people with the police force and police brutality over there. But they seem to think that it's only happening over there. I think they were shocked that it happens here with Dondale. But is that part of the problem? They want to think that we're actually the lucky country. We wouldn't do something like that. We don't have a racism problem. They would prefer to say, oh, it's just happening. The police force in America is out of control. But, you know, over here we're all right. Do you think that's a part of it, that Australians are really blinded to what's happening here?
Yeah. Well, that's a part of what I was saying before about the whole world's still partially blind to what's going on here, because Australia has done such a great job from their point of view in hiding the truth and hiding genocide and murders and massacres and stolen generations and everything else that they've done and inflicted and still doing to our peoples here on our very own stolen lands. The most oppressed people in the world, one of peoples, and yet we're one of the most richest countries. That speaks volumes.
Oh, it definitely does. And I really hope that there's some form of justice for your niece. I just wanted to ask you, what would you think, and I've asked you this before, but what would justice mean for you, looking when you've been campaigning for 2 years, you've gone through the coronial inquest process, you're still waiting for it to end, but what would you like to see happen? What do you think would help you heal and help your family heal and would provide justice for your niece?
There's so many things, but for myself personally, the top of the list would be conviction. For the first time ever in Australia, if there were so many parties involved with my niece's death, you had around a dozen police and almost as many, if not just as much, health staff. Someone needs to be held accountable, even though they all have bloodstained hands. Someone needs to be held accountable. We want convictions. We have always wanted convictions, because that's true accountability.
For me, it's
unaccounted bloodstained hands is not justice. And two of the officers involved were promoted. So that is far from justice.
they were praised, they were rewarded, even though they'd done this surrendered thing. I think when you look at nearly 400 deaths in custody, isn't it? In fact, no police officer or prison staff has ever been held convicted over an Aboriginal death in custody. It says it all, really, doesn't it? The fact that we're still waiting for that to happen. I mean, that's just amazing that that never happened. I was just thinking of Mr. Ward, the most one of the recent really outrageous cases where that respected Aboriginal elder, Mr. Ward, was killed by being baked alive, basically, in a prison van. Complete neglect, really disgusting apathy, and no one was ever convicted. They were just let off the hook. And it was sort of white guilt. They all cried and they all said they were sorry, but sorry doesn't mean anything, does it? I mean, sorry doesn't bring back a respected member of the community or heal that pain, does it? It needs to go further than that.
Yeah, we all know what happens when the government says sorry. It's just the sorry and that's it. Nothing changes and things get worse, just as with Sorry Day. More children have been removed since Sorry Day. 15,000 to 20,000 children have been removed since Sorry Day. That's not saying sorry.
No, it's not at all. And I'm sorry means sorry does more for the oppressor than it does for the oppressed, doesn't it? It helps them appease
their guilt. That's right. It's just to take a little bit of weight off their conscience.
Well, I really hope that we'll continue to follow this as well. And what are you doing to mark your niece's anniversary today? What will you be hoping to do and what's your family doing?
Yeah, we've got an action at the Central Law Courts today, so we're going to make as much noise as we can, and main focus being with the release of the footage, and plus we have a very special guest speaker being Lex Whiten from Palm Island. As you all know, with Mr. Dormagee's death in custody, so we're really looking forward to having Mr. Whiten over here, and he's going to make a statement for death in custody as a whole, and for black rights and for WA. You know, it's going to open a lot of eyes up, and yeah, it's just a massive privilege to get Lex over this way to help and support, which is what we need to start sticking together and yeah, to try and get the job done for our peoples and our younger generations.
A bit of Murray Yemaji solidarity. It's really great.
That's
to
right. That's the East Coast West Coast solidarity, which is how it's should always be, you know, but the government, they try as much as they can to stop us from doing that, but time's come where we've got to get back to it, I think.
And we'll keep following your case and make sure that we are following it, and Aboriginal media are punching hard for you mob as well. So thank you so much for joining me today, Sean, and I'm sure we'll put all the details of the protest on the website and continue to update our listeners as well about what's going to happen. So thank you so much.
No worries. Thank you. And I'd just like to thank everyone out there again for all the help and support that you've given and stuck by us all this way. It's just invaluable. And, yeah, we do get the extra strength that we need from out of nowhere, plus out of all the people out there like yourself and all you listeners. And, yeah, thanks tremendously for that. We won't stop fighting for my niece and for all of us. So, yep, in unity and solidarity, eh?
Was Sean Harris ending that there with a call for solidarity? His niece, Ms. Jew, died in custody 2 years ago, nearly 25 years after the Royal Commission, or more than that, in circumstances scarily similar to the types of deaths the Commission was investigating. And they're calling for accountability. They're calling for the CCTV footage of their nieces and their loved ones, deaf, Miss Jew, to be made public in order to raise public consciousness and outrage around this continuing problem. It isn't confined to 30 years ago when the commission was investigating deaths. It's happening right now. And Miss Jew was locked up for, she was a victim of family violence, and she was locked up for failure to pay fines, about over $3,000 in fines. And that's where she lost her life. A really devastating sense of apathy from the health professionals and the police officers who were tasked with the duty of looking after her, but she shouldn't have even been in prison in the first place. Now, if you would like to listen back to this program, and we'll put up our details as well for if you would like to find out more about Ms. Dew's case and the family's continual calls for the release of the CCTV footage. Go to our website, 989fm.com.au. We'll also put up a lot of details on our Facebook page, 989fm. They're doing a protest. There was a forum last night, and they're continuing with a rally today in Perth. Lex Wadden from Palm Island up in Queensland, who was involved in the uprising against the death in custody of Morangi Dumaji. Strongman has gone over there to help in solidarity with Miss Dew's family. So he's currently over there as well. So I'd like to wish him well too. For now, we'll go to a song, and thank you so much for joining me.